Good evening. Thanks for coming back for Mitzvah of the Week. The topic for tonight actually takes me a little bit back to 2 years ago, because when I came for my Prabha Shabbos, it was Shabbos Zachar, so it's hard to believe that that was 2 years ago, but on Friday night I discussed some aspects of this, but we'll go in a little more depth than we did in that, you know, 5 to 8 minute Friday night slot. And there's what to discuss also this year in terms of Parsha Zachor and the pandemic. Some of the issues will also overlap with Megillah, and hopefully we'll get a little taste for what this mitzvah is about, why it's so important. So I think, first of all, one thing to think about, the word Zachor means to remember. And oftentimes when we talk about remembering in Judaism in general, so we're not talking about recalling facts necessarily. So for example, when it comes to Zichronos in Rosh Hashanah and Musaf, so we're not talking about God merely remembering things that he forgot, right? First of all, it's a little bit absurd. God doesn't forget things. But Zikaron means something more than just remembering. Okay, so is it just that we need to know things as facts? And Rabbi Jonathan Sacks talked about how Judaism is a religion of memory. And memory making is something that's important to us as Jews, and it's important to human beings in general. There are things we do to ritualize the act of remembering. So for example, if somebody has a particular birthday or anniversary, so that might be a time where you reminisce about certain things. And there's also things we do to ritualize the act of remembering in the context of remembering a loved one. So Yizkor is probably the best example of that, but even the concept of Yahrzeit. So the idea is not that we're necessarily going to entirely forget, although sometimes there are little details that would slip our memory until we think about them. But it's about something a little bit more than that. It's about having a consciousness, about paying attention to it, about giving it thought. So we have, there are a few places in the Torah where we're told to remember things. We're told to remember Shabbos. We're told to remember Miriam and what happened to Miriam and Tzaraas. So there are 6 of these mitzvahs that are actually at the end of Shacharis. Some people look at those on a daily basis. But this particular mitzvah that's relevant for us this coming Shabbos, as it's going to be Parsha Zachor, Purim's coming up, which is hard to believe. So let's read the psukim very quickly, just a couple of psukim, but very important psukim. So the Torah tells us, Zachor et asher salacha Amalek baderech betzeitchem b'mitzrayim. Remember what Amalek did for you on your journey after you left Egypt. Asher karcha baderech, vayzanev becha kol nechashalim acharecha. How he surprised you on the march and cut down all the stragglers in your rear. Vata ayef v'yageh v'lo yareokim. You were famished and weary and not God-fearing. By the way, I changed some things around this translation. I got this translation originally from Sepharia, which I believe is based on the JPS. But this was an example where translation is also an interpretation. I tried to sort of modify it so that it would be, you know, plain pshuto shel mikra, right? Just the way it intuitively appears here. Okay, so then it continues. V'haya v'haniya Hashem elkecha lecha mikol oyevecha misaviv ba'aretz asher Hashem elkecha notin lecha nachala lishta. So therefore, when the Lord your God grants you safety from all your enemies around you, in the land that the Lord your God is giving to you as a hereditary portion, you shall blot out the memory of Amalek from under heaven. Lo tishkach, do not forget. So that's what the Torah tells us. So the story of Amalek really goes back to Shmot. So here we have in Parshat Ki Tetzeh in Sefer Dvarim, this is towards the end of Moshe Rabbeinu's life. B'nei Yisrael are getting ready to go into Egypt, and what happened in Amalek was already a generation earlier. So So there's a whole series of events in Parshat B'Shalach. They leave Egypt, Kriyas Yamsuf, a couple of controversial moments, some complaining, etc. And then we get to the story of Amalek. Amalek does a little bit of an ambush, and there's a battle, and Bnei Israel win. But here, the Torah comes back and tells us that we have to remember this event. But at the same time, we're supposed to blot out the memory, and then we're not supposed to forget. So some interesting things going on here. And also, I mean, it's interesting, you know, why this? There are other battles that that we fought. Doesn't necessarily tell us, I don't think we have to remember necessarily what Adam did to us or the like. So, there's a lot of interesting things going on here. But there are three mitzvahs that emerge from this parsha. They're all connected, but there's three different ones. So one, we'll go through in order as the Rambam presents it. So two mitzvot ase, one mitzvah lo tase, two positive commandments, one negative commandment. So positive mitzvah 188 for the Rambam is shetivanu lehachrid zera Amalek levad bishar zera Esav. That we're supposed to cut off the descendants of Amalek beyond the other mandatory wars that we're supposed to conduct. There's a specific mitzvah to destroy Amalek. So that's one thing we get that from Timcha at Zecher Amalek, that we're really supposed to destroy and to cut them off. So that's one mitzvah, and that could be a separate shiur what that's about, but that part of it, I'm a little bit less interested about that. Although the Haftarah that we read on Shabbat Zachor is certainly related to this. So then you have Sefer HaMitzvahs, this is mitzvah number 189. So the very next mitzvah, Shetzivanu liskor masha asa lanu Amalek makdimo lehara lanu. We have to remember what Amalek did when it came to do bad for us, right? But like it initiated bad, right? It wasn't just that they happened to stumble upon us and there was a little bit of disagreement and there's a war, but they initiated, they brazenly went forward with this. V'shenomar zeh b'chol eid va'eid, we should recall this all the time. V'ne'orer ha'nefashot b'ma'arim l'hilachem bo, we should fight it. We should rouse ourselves to battle against them. V'nezareis ha'am lisno oto ad shelo tishkach ha'mitzvah. V'lo techashtin atov v'techzar min ha'nefashot im orach hazman. We have to. Pay attention to really get people riled up to hate Amalek until we will never forget, and that this memory won't weaken over time, right? Which is a very interesting thing, because the truth is that with a lot of things, with time, emotions simmer, our feelings simmer, memory dissipates. So there might be something that, you know, even within the span of 24 hours, we could get really, really upset about something. And we can think that, you know, a grave injustice has been done against us. And then a day, two, a couple weeks later, maybe we softened up a little bit. We've gotten over it. We've moved on to other things. It's not a big deal. So when you think about it, it's something like Amalek. So if not for this mitzvah, we'd read this story and say, okay, that was bad. That was immoral. This nation that just escaped oppression, and you're going to attack them from behind. How horrible that is! But the visceral feeling wouldn't necessarily be there. You're talking about a couple thousand years, a few thousand years, so very likely that isn't sticking. So that's what. So the Rambam saying that's the importance of the mitzvah to remember. Is that if we didn't go out of our way to remember, and we didn't make a big deal about it, right? Everybody comes in Shabbos morning, Shabbos Zachor. We'll talk about obviously the parameters of this, but people come in and say we have to hear Zachor, do another reading and another reading. We make a big deal about this because the truth is, if we didn't, we'd forget. Okay, and then we have a negative mitzvah that not only do we have to remember, but we have to be careful not to forget. Right, so we have to be careful not to forget. Right, and this here also, I'd say that you know, there's a certain paradigm in history that you know, we can move on and we can forgive and whatnot, but we're not going to recognize future threats. Right, it's if you kind of just, you know, forgive and let go, so you're not necessarily alert in the same way. So think about this in the context of the Shoah. Right, already it's only been 70 years, and there are surveys indicating how many people in the world haven't heard of the Holocaust, don't know how many Jews were killed in the Holocaust. The world is already starting to forget. So it seems like with the Zohar part is sort of preserving the emotional aspect of it. We have to maintain the emotion, you know, the hatred towards Amalek. But then there's an even more simpler, you know, lo tishkach, that at the very least you certainly can't forget or let it slip consciousness or you know, maybe some historians are aware of it, which is also, there's certain things in Jewish history that, you know, maybe people sort of have some background knowledge on, but don't really remember. Here it's really about, you know, making sure that doesn't happen, that we don't let it slip, that doesn't just become something for another dense history book. Not allowed to move on. So the Sefer HaChinuch also codifies that there's three mitzvahs also. So Chinuch describes how everyone was afraid of Am Yisrael after Mitzrayim. That's what we have in Shirat Hayam. Shamu Amim Yirgazun, Chinuch as Yoshvei Pashat. That everybody was trembling, they were terrified. And then you have this group, Amalek, that thinks that thinks that they're not, they're not like everybody else. They're more brazen. They're ready to attack. They have absolutely no shame. No sense that, you know, maybe there's a God who's on the side of Bnei Israel. They don't care whatsoever, right? And Chiduch gives a very interesting analogy here. There's an analogy here. Liyora rotachas, you have a boiling pot, she'en kol ber yachol alere letocha. Right? No creature whatsoever could go into this boiling pot, they would die. Uva echa v'kafatz v'yar letocha. And then you have this one crazy one that decides to go in. So ava pishenichva hekar ota l'achirim. So even though that one is going to be burnt, but it cools it down for everybody else. So what's the problem with what Amalek did? Amalek made it acceptable to attack the Jewish people, which is, again, they're the very first one. So we'd face many, many enemies post-Amalek. And forget Mitzrayim for a second, but post-Mitzrayim, right, after God has committed to the Jewish people, and in theory, everybody else, you know, sort of knew at that point that you don't touch Bnei Israel. But Amalek, even though they lost, or even though they were burned, so to speak, they made it acceptable. And that's a theme that's persisted throughout Jewish history. So that's something, that's definitely something to dwell on. If we're trying to think about, you know, what's the big deal about this? The big deal is that they were first, and they made it, they normalized it. And so that's a lot to think about. Sometimes we think that, you know, when there's a certain hatred that's expressed, so you think, oh, it's, you know, they just said something, not a big deal, whatever. But when you get on the road to normalizing it, it becomes very problematic. So Mishor Sheha Mitzvah, what are the reasons for the mitzvah according to Sefer HaChinuch? Latet ad libeinu shekol ha-mitzar Yisrael sanui lifnei Hashem Baruch Hu. That we should have it in our hearts that anybody who causes trouble, anybody who causes distress to the Jewish people is hated before Hashem. It's kind of an interesting reason. I was trying to think about what's going on there. But what I was thinking about is that calls into question, what are the parameters of forgiveness? What are the parameters of trying to make peace, of making alliances? That's something that, Ad HaYom Hazeh is relevant. We think about the state of Israel. Your most modern day example is people who try to attack threatened to attack the state of Israel. Israel's had a longstanding, or used to have a longstanding policy of not negotiating with terrorists, right? So, there's something sort of very practical of, do you trust somebody who appears to be an enemy, was an enemy, maybe he's not an enemy anymore? But there's also something sort of theological here also to remember that we can't let go so easily. We can't let go so easily, right? It's a mitzvah from the Torah. Okay. And we'll come back to the rest of this chinuch soon. So then the question becomes, so we have this mitzvah. What Amalek did was evil on so many levels. First of all, again, attacking the weak. It's one thing to sometimes, if you have to engage in battle, God forbid, with somebody who's strong. Okay, so it's a fair match, but going after the weak, the vulnerable, whatnot is totally antithetical to the Torah. So that's one aspect of that. It's one, and maybe it's something for us to pay attention to also, right? Is that sometimes, it's easy to sort of remember our own experiences of being victims, but sometimes the victim becomes the bully, right? So that's something for us to internalize also, that we remember what Amalek did. Maybe also it's a reminder to us, what the Torah's values are in that sense, but also gives us a sense that Amalek is hated before Hashem because of what they did to us. Unlike, say Shaul, who decided to be merciful to Agag, to let him go, as we'll see in the Haftarah, he didn't have a right to do that because it's not that any one individual leader has the right to just, let go and forgive, but that person is looked at a certain way in God's eyes. And it's our responsibility to bring justice in the case of Shaul, right, his ancestors and the like. So that's what we have so far, I think. So how do we remember Amalek? What does the mitzvah of Zachor entail? And that's what we're going to focus on. What does Zachor really entail? The Gemara brings up discussion about reading Megillah by heart, Lo Yatsa. So we get the idea of Schira Schira. So in the Megillah it says, Vayimim ha'ela nizkarim, these days are remembered. And then when it came to Amalek, Tov zot zikaron b'sefer, write this memory down in a book. So just like Amalek was written down in a book in the Sefer Torah, so too with Megillah Esther. So the Gemara asks, Mimai dehai zechira kriya, how do I know they have to read it? They'll let you about, maybe I just have to think about it. Or Clayton said a gloss over it. So the Gemara rejects that because they have the word Zachor. So what? So you're going to remember in the heart? So then when it comes to Amalek, right? Shehu omer lo tishkach, we're not supposed to forget. So reshichad alev amor, I'm not supposed to forget from my heart. So what is Zachor about? Zachor is verbalizing it, right? Which, if you think about it, if all we had to do was just to think about it, so everybody maybe think about it on their own or whatever. When it's Zachor, you do it out loud. So it gives adds certain gravitas to the mitzvah. It's not just something we're supposed to think about, but something that we talk about, something we discuss, something that's on the communal agenda, something that's done in shul. So that adds a lot to it. So according to the Gemara, it definitely has to be verbalized. You have to do it. You have to read a particular passage. Let's just stop at that. You have to verbalize it. Now, according to the Ramban, what he writes on Parshat Zachor So he says, "V'nochom b'enai shuhu lo mar shelo tishkach mash asalanu amalek ad shenimcha ad shemo b'tach ha'shemayim v'nisaper zel v'aneinu d'oretenu lomar lahem kach asalanu harasha." So according to Ramban, the mitzvah is that we have to tell our future descendants, future generations, this is what this Rasha did to us. Remember this. So according to Ramban, it sounds like it's not necessarily about reading a particular parsha, but it's talking about it. You could have a Zachor Seder, so to speak, and you sit around at dinner and you talk about it, and that would seem to be sufficient. It seems like the Rambam would agree with that also. Right? It doesn't say anything about reading Parshat Zachor. Shemar is a bechol eight v'eight. Should talk about it. Should remember it frequently. So that's what we have. That's what we have so far. However, the Tosfos are bringing up the idea of whether laning is doraita. Richard comes up in the context of whether Torah can be read in any language. But Tosfos would bring up Kriyat HaTorah is not something that's required from the Torah, something that was enacted by sages, particularly by Ezra, but it's not deraita. Levabi Parshat Zachor dehavi deraita. However, when it comes to Parshat Zachor, it sounds like Zachor is required from the Torah, meaning that you have to read the Parsha of Zachor. You have to read that particular Parsha. So we have this Machloket, Ramban and Tosfot, or seeming Machloket between them. Yosef Tzvi Rimon points out that really, according to both approaches, obviously you can read Parshat Zachor and fulfill it. The question is, do you have to? So according to Ramban, it seems like maybe not. According to Tosfot, you have to. So Shulchan Aruch actually sort of is interesting here. So first, the Shulchan Aruch says, "Yesh omrim sheparshat zachor parshat para aduma chayavim lekar midaraita." There's some who say that parshat zachor you have to read from the Torah, which implies that there are others who don't think you have to do that. Meaning in many cases in Shulchan Aruch, there were originally multiple opinions, but Shulchan Aruch decides which one it wants to follow. Okay, but here the Shulchan Aruch is saying that there's some who say, meaning that it sounds like there's a valid other side, except, and that's interestingly, specifically when it discusses the Arba Parshiot, right, in Tafresh Pehe, all the way towards the end of Aruch Chaim, when it gets up to Purim, so that's where he says that. However, in Hilchot Kriyat HaTorah, the Shulchan Aruch says, "V'choza eino inyan leparshat Zachor parshat Para shehem ba'asara midaraita." So the context here is that is discussing whether you can learn during laning, whether you can do Shnei Mikra v'Echad Targum during laning, and the Shulchan Aruch says, yeah, most of the time you can. The Torah has to be read to the community, but doesn't necessarily mean that each individual person has to listen. Except when it comes to Zachor and Para, since they are deraita, everybody has to listen and have kavana to it. By the way, it indicates to us that just being in shouldering Zachor doesn't fulfill your obligation, but you have to be thinking about it, right? Which makes sense because the whole mitzvah is to remember. So passively listening doesn't count. You have to, the whole mitzvah only works if you're really internalizing it, right? Which we discussed this on Shabbos HaGadol. That's maybe different than other mitzvahs where, you can have, you could be doing them and the experience of it itself is enough. But here you obviously have to have kavana. So Shulchan Aruch seems to come out on the side that Parshat Zachor is deraita. You have to read that parsha in order to forget, in order to fulfill your obligation. Right, so it's a little more assertive here. Okay, now does it have to be directly from a Sefer Torah? Does it have to be a kosher Sefer Torah? What happens if you realize later that the Sefer Torah was pasul? So the Prima Gadim is of the opinion that if you heard it from a Sefer Torah that's pasul, it doesn't count. Even after the fact, so you'd have to go back and repeat it from a kosher Sefer Torah. That's what Prima Gadim says, and that makes sense. Tosfo note that, that we quoted this pasuk Tozop Sikarumba Sefer. You have to write down this memory in a book, so it sounds like it really should come from a kosher Sefer Torah. So Prima Gadim seems to agree with that. The Maharam Shik the Maharam Shik, I wrote, a 19th century Hungarian rabbi. He's a student of Chasam Sofer. So he writes that Bidyavid, it's acceptable, you know, if it wasn't entirely kosher Sefer Torah. But the idea of it being from a Sefer in that it has to be written is that you shouldn't just talk about it. Like, unlike what the Ramban said, you can't just talk about it, be Yotze that way. But you have to, so it has to come from a Sefer Torah. But you know, if it happened to be that there was some deficiency in the Sefer Torah, that's not preventative. You did the mitzvah. Now, question would be, somebody who is not able to hear Parshas Zachor from a Torah, so what should they do? So what they will talk about is whether other ways of doing it count. But Rabbi Yosef Tzvi Rimon brings the Kaf HaChaim, Rabbi Yaakov Chaim Sofer, who is a 20th century Sephardi rabbi. So he says, Yemiya Shar Lahem Lavo, you can't come to Shul to do it. Mikol Makom Yizar Lekros. So no Lomar, Yemiya Shar Lahem Yikru Tam B'Sefer Torah. If you have a Torah, you should do it. But then it brings up the question, a minyan, there's not a minyan. So Kafachai is living in the 20th century. They had printed the Chumashim at that point. So if you don't have access to a Sefer Torah, at the very least, you should read it from a Chumash. That is what the Kafachai recommends. So then question comes up, does Parsha Zachor need to be done with the minyan, which is something that the Kaf HaChaim sort of alluded to here. So Shulchan Aruch seems to, in fact, say that it is necessary, right? He says that there's some who say that Parsha Zachor is a chiv deraisa. The fichach bnei yishuvim she'en la minyan tzrichim lavo l'makom she'esh minyan b'shabbasos halalu kedei lishmoa parshios elu she'en midaraisa. So therefore, according to this approach, that hearing Parsha Zachor at this point is deraisa, right? So if you live somewhere where there's not a minyan, you should make sure that you come to a place that there's a minyan in order to hear these parshios. So that's what Shulchan Aruch seems to say. That is based on the Trumas Hadesh and the Rush. The Maharam Shik says that, you know, not necessarily. So there's a communal obligation for Parsha Zachor to be read, but it doesn't mean that's the only way to do it. And in fact, the Mishnah Berurah and the Shaar HaTzion reject the idea that it has to be with the minyan. You know, he says, "Eini yodea shum makor is that? I don't know why. I don't know where they got this from." Intuitively, I guess you could say, "Well, you know, it's from should be like other Kriyas HaTorah, which is done with the minyan." But the Shaar HaTzion says not necessarily so, and I believe one could rely on this if it were necessary. But it's always good to have a minyan just to do it the best way possible. So how often does one have to do Parsha Zachor? So we've been sort of implying that you have to do it frequently, but if we go back to the Rambam Sefer Mitzvah, so he says Shinomar Zebuchol 8 for 8. And so someone understand the Rambam to mean that really should be remembering Amalek every day. And again, some people have say that, you know, certain zachors every day after Shacharis. Sefer Chinuch makes an interesting point. He brings up an interesting idea. There's no set time to do it, right? Zechira Yitzyah Mitzrayim, we have to do every single day. In that case, the whole foundation of Judaism is remembering Yitzyah Mitzrayim. So that you have to do on a daily basis. The idea of Amalek is that we just shouldn't forget about it. So he says, V'dai lanabaz at least kora inyam pamachas b'shana u'shtei shanim v'shalosh. So maybe once a year, once every 2 years, once every 3 years. That's enough, because you heard Parsha Zachor, you're aware of the mitzvah. You hear about it every 3 years, you're not going to forget about it so easily. So Sefer HaChinuch brings with that point. So that's what he says. However, Din Yelikrosa Biyom Purim Lefisha Hu Minyano Shel Yom Ki Haman Harasha Yam Mizara. So he brings out that, you know, that it would make sense to read it on Purim because Haman was a descendant of Amalek. Aval Lehodiya Shekodam Nez Zenit Stavino Bizhira Zo Kavu Paparsha Kodam Lepurim. But in order to inform us that before the miracle of Purim, that, you know, that we have this idea of remembering Amalek. So we read before Purim, but the idea is to be juxtaposed to Purim, right? So in theory, you could do it every so often, but there is something to be said about it being close to Purim. Maybe not a bad idea to do it every year. Sefer Rukeach notes that Zachor liyos zochrim osam v'korim osam chol shana v'shana. You should do it every single year. And this Rav Rimon is supported by a Gemara that says that ein hames mishtakech bin alev el lachar shneim asar chodesh. So we're talking about remembering somebody who's passed away. So the wrong memory of that person and the grief dissipates after about a year. So this perhaps is a standard that forgetting takes place once it's been over a year, which is not so outlandish. Now, truth be told, I don't necessarily think of Amalek every day. The concern that that we'd sort of let Amalek and the memory of it sort of slip and the emotional and the visceral emotion dissipates, there's something to be said for that. So how do I really sort of maintain consciousness of it? The fact that we read it once a year, we make a mitzvah out of it, that it's done from Sefer Torah, sort of adds to the potency, adds the opportunity for reflection on it. Not for that, would we really remember it that often? Would we really remember that often? Maybe not. So there's certainly a wisdom to the idea that if there's something that we're really not supposed to forget. So it definitely needs to be done on a regular basis. And somebody said, look, if we did it every day, so that would certainly mean something. But the notion of extending it more than a year, I think, according to this Gemara in Brachos, makes a lot of sense. When something's only every few years, it's something that it's just not as much in our consciousness. In theory, when you read Parsha Zachor, really shouldn't make too much of a difference. Right? In fact, if we're talking about, assuming that Parsha Zachor is Daraita, right? But the notion of reading the Shabbos before Purim is certainly not Daraita, because there was no Purim at that point. But that's where I think, where the Chinuch comes in and mentions that, Haman was a descendant of Amalek. So this is the appropriate time to do it. It also gives us a sense of matchil begnut misayim b'shevach, which is something we have by Pesach, that we can't fully appreciate freedom without having discussed the whole story, right? Without the avadim hayinu, we don't necessarily have the halal and the like. And maybe that's true with Purim also, right? We have Tanit Esther before Purim. Same thing with Zachor, that maybe before we get into the celebration of Purim, so we have to remember Amalek, his descendants, how lethal they are, what the threat was, and that can help us fully appreciate the miracle and the significance of what was accomplished on Purim. So in light of all of this, do we specifically have to read from that passage of Parsha Ki Tetzeh? So that seems to be, that's certainly practice. Is that required? So Magen Avraham says, So he says, Miktiv b'Torah shikru davka b'Shabbos zeh. Does it say in the Torah you should read specifically in the Shabbos? Ela shechachamim tiknu b'Shabbos zo ho shchichei rabim b'Beis HaKnesses. So why read it on Shabbos? Because people are coming to shul. V'samach l'parim k'dei lismoch ma'aseh Amalek l'ma'aseh Haman. Right. So like the Chinuch said, to connect Amalek to Haman. So a couple good reasons to do it on the Shabbos. But he says, we have a laning on Purim also. The laning from Purim is not this Parsha Zachor, but it's the story of Amalek attacking Bnei Israel, right? That actual story, when it comes to the Parsha Shmos, we read that on Purim. So he says maybe that should count also, if need be. The Aruch HaShulchan does not, and the Mishnah Berurah do not agree with this. Aruch HaShulchan says, Onisa Daiti Eino King. This is just not correct. And why not? Because when we read the passage by Vayavo Amalek, it doesn't mention the mitzvah to remember and the mitzvah to blot out the memory of Amalek. It mentions something about God blotting out the memory of Amalek, but nothing about our obligation to do so. So therefore, he says that, Aruch HaShulchan says that it doesn't count to just merely mention the story. Can't read it from Shmos, but it has to be the Parsha Zachor from Parshat Ki Tetzeh that we read for Parshat Zachor. Right? And again, in theory, it should be enough to read it on Parshat Ki Tetzeh. There's no reason from the Torah itself that you should have to read it on this Shabbos, except that that the takana of the rabbis was to make it the Shabbos before Purim. Right? And the Aruch HaShulchan's reasoning is sort of powerful here, right? Because again, we're not just talking about remembering a story, just like, you know, there are lots of war stories in Tanakh, but the significance of this one is in fulfilling the mitzvah is having that conscious awareness of the fact that there's an obligation and why we have that obligation. So that makes it very significant to read this passage from Ki Tetzeh. And to the extent that the Mishnah Berurah and the Aruch HaShulchan, Gdolei HaPoskim of the early 20th century, late 19th century, the fact that they agree on this would certainly caution us to do our best to hear it from Parsha Ki Tetzeh. However, let's just say, and this is a question that certainly relevant for this year, and was even a little bit relevant last year. Let's say one physically cannot get to shul in order to hear Parsha Zachor, so what should they do? So Rav Rimon says that we could rely on the notion of on the Magen Avraham's position of reading from, let's say if somebody can't come on Shabbos, but they can come on Purim, so maybe better that they read from the Chumash on Shabbos and then rely on the Magen Avraham that they'll come to Shul on Purim and hear the story of Amalek. But on the top of that, so when we get up to Parsha Ki Tetzeh, and maybe we'll have to make a point of this year, that when we get to that part in the laning, that people should have kavana when we get to Parshat Ki Tetzeh to fulfill the yearly mitzvah of hearing Parshas Zachor. So this would be sort of the ideal positions. And in terms of us, so we're going to have an outdoor reading. Hopefully the weather will cooperate, that we'll be able to make it work. That will help people be able to fulfill the mitzvah on Shabbos and whatnot. Do women have to hear Parsha Zachor? So that's a whole discussion. Sefer HaChinuch says that women are not obligated. That was above. However, the Binyan Zion, Rabbi Yaakov Ettlinger, 19th century German rabbi, said that when it comes to Zachor, it's not a mitzvah Asei Shazman Grama. I mean, it happens to be that we sort of created the requirement of doing it once a year, but it's not really a mitzvah Asei Shezman Grama in the same way that other mitzvahs are, number one, especially on a Torah level. And number two, one might make the argument, well, women weren't necessarily fighting in the war against Amalek, so maybe it's not relevant to them. And Binyan Zion says it's absolutely not the case, that that this is a national event, a national remembrance. Think about Yom HaZikaron. You don't necessarily have to have been an Israeli soldier to appreciate the importance of Yom HaZikaron, of the significance of the battles, what's been accomplished, what the sacrifices were, and women have a role in preserving the natural spirit of transmitting the story, of setting the values, and there can even be, you know, real benefit to it, right? There were some women who played very significant roles in some Jewish wars. Esther, Yehudit. It's a whole discussion whether she was really involved in the story of Hanukkah, but she was certainly a heroine. Yael in Sefer Shoftim. So there's plenty of reasons for women too, for this mitzvah to be relevant to women also. Chazon Ish and Rosh Zalman Orbach say that women technically aren't obligated, but common practice is for women to fulfill this mitzvah. I believe that's the prevalent psak in our community, that women should hear Parshat Zachor. Rav Rimon says at least to read from a chumash, but not only should women hear the lining, but should hear it with a minyan. Again, I think that's the most mainstream psak in our communities. I'm going to skip a couple of things, but I want to get to the issue of can one hear with the microphone? And it's particularly relevant to Zoom. It's not necessarily the only issue connected with Zoom. And it's also connected to Megillah, really, right? If I have a mitzvah where I have to hear something, does it count if I hear it through a microphone, if I hear it through an internet connection? So that's a question that modern day poskim deal with, and it's a bit of a machloka between Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach and Rav Moshe Feinstein. So Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach says that's a big mistake to think that you know that a microphone's transmitting the actual sound of the voice. He says it's not just something that's amplifying the voice, right? It's not something that's just happening, making your voice travel farther and louder, but the microphone and the technology behind it really sort of transforms the sound that it's transmitting. It's transmitting sound waves, but it's not really the same thing as the voice itself. So he says, therefore, I'm very surprised that there's some who allowed people to hear Mikra Megillah with a microphone, and how they didn't pay attention to the fact that scientifically it's not the actual voice, but it's a transmission of things that sound like the voice. So he says that people should not hear it that way. Certainly not over the radio. Should not say Amen to a bracha over the radio. None of that works according to Shlomo Zalman and Auerbach. Moshe Feinstein doesn't agree. Somebody brings up the possibility that you're hearing an echo. It's not the real thing. Or you're just hearing an echo. And Moshe Feinstein says that's absolutely not relevant. In fact, if anything, with the microphone, you're hearing like a strong, a strong, clear voice. So he doesn't like that sort of presentation of it. So he said, So he says that so there's some experts that might say, well, you're not hearing the real voice, but Moshe Feinstein says at the end of the day, you're hearing the voice, right? Well, what we perceive is really what matters. It's a whole way of looking at life, right? Are we a whole bunch of atoms and molecules and the like, or do we see things sort of as they are? Do we hear things as they are? So Moshe Feinstein says that that hearing the voice is hearing the voice. It's not relevant they're hearing it from a radio or a microphone that's not technically. You're hearing it from the speaker, which is not technically Baruch Hu, but you're hearing the person's voice. He says, however, so he says there's too much reform going on in the United States with religion. And if we start allowing people to use microphones, which is kind of a new thing, and we're going that route, so we're opening up the possibility that all sorts of innovations will come as a result. So Moshe Feinstein in principle supports the idea that you could fulfill the mitzvah of Megillah through a microphone, but Paskin's against it for other considerations. The same thing would apply to Zoom. Same thing would apply to Parshas Zachor. We are relying on the leaning opinion for those who don't necessarily have a choice. So for Shabbos Zachor, I guess it's complicated. Shabbos, better to come hear it outside. But for Megillah, where it's more complicated to do it outside, especially since it's hard in our lot to hear, there's a lot of traffic on the street, a lot of honking, ambulances, chas v'shalom, You know, just people talking. So not really practical to do it out, Mick or Miguel outside. So we're extending the Zoom option to people, but that's sort of the halacha behind it. So the summary of the COVID-related points, at least, is that it's best to hear Parsha Zachor on Shabbos before Purim. That was the original Takas Chazal. If you can't do that, so and you could hear Parsha Samalek on Purim, so you could do that and read Parsha Zachor from a Chumash on Shabbos. You could also try to be Yotze and Parsha Kitetze if you're going to be able to come to Shul by then. If you can hear it outdoors, great. In theory, one could hear Parsha Zachor over Zoom, but maybe not as optimal. I want to end with one last vort that the Torah tells us that Amalek Asher Karcha Baderech Bezenet Becha Kol Nechshalim Acharecha, they surprise you on the march and cut down all the stragglers at the rear, all the vulnerable. Natalia Ayef V'Yageya, and you were famished and weary, V'lo Yare Elokim, and not God fearing. The question is the Ayef V'Yageya going on the, you know, the Nechshalim Acharecha V'Yataya Ayef V'Yageya, and then V'lo Yare Elokim is going back to Amalek? Or is it saying that you were tired and weary and not God-fearing? So Rashi and Ibn Ezra say that it was Amalek who wasn't God-fearing, right? It's saying that you were, you know, they attacked the ones in the back who were tired and weary. And this was a demonstration that Amalek wasn't God-fearing. However, the Nitziv says that it's Kai Al Yisrael that's talking about the Jewish people. The Jewish people were tired and were weary, and it didn't have sort of the elamit halach betum b'lishim chakir etzon atzbi. There was no, you know, serious self motivation. There was no. It was Bnei Yisrael who didn't have the Yirat Shamayim. When you go back to this to what's going on in Sefer Shemot around then, it actually makes a lot of sense because there was a lot of complaining. Food, water would have been better back in Egypt. Moshe, what are you trying to do to us? There is a big breakdown in Emunah post Kriyas Yamsuf. And it's right after that, right after, and we call it after another episode of Bnei Yisrael complaining about the water, that we have Parshas Amalek. And it makes the Nitziv's reading very, very compelling. That's Bnei Yisrael who weren't God fearing. And maybe this kind of perspective is what we would call today victim blaming. But I think it's a description of what happens when we let our guard down. If we don't have appropriate emunah for focusing on things in a non-productive manner, these complaints cause us to forget the bigger picture. If we're nitpicking about everything in life, we're arguing and we're bickering about everything, we forget the bigger picture. And the reality is that sometimes internal threats are worse than external threats, right? When there's strife and controversy, it causes us to lose our guard. It causes us to forget the bigger picture. It causes us to forget that God is in control. And God ultimately rescues us from Amalek, but it was perhaps us who weren't God-fearing. It's not mutually exclusive, but in addition to the importance of remembering history and internalizing it, so many different reasons why that is that we discussed at the beginning, also important for us to remember that at all places and times, right, when we remember Amalek, we don't forget. We also have to remember sort of what our role was in that, not just what was done to us, but what it means for us to be the best of ourselves, to be at the top, and to be able to withstand any challenge that comes our way, to do so with emunah and with good grace. Okay, thanks everyone for tuning in.